Can you explain Fortnite to me in like 30 seconds? What goes on?
Not really.
It looks
not in 30 seconds.
Okay. It looks very confusing. It looks like it would be something I would hate.
I've never played.
Yeah, I can confirm that.
Okay.
What we do here is go back.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Wheel Route Podcast. This is mildly legitimate conversation amongst friends and lovers about college football and lifestyle. You can find us, The Wheel Route, on the internet at www.thewheelroute.com. Send us emails, wheelroutepodcast@gmail.com. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify primarily, I believe. And I think we have Instagram too. DMs are wide open. My name is Logan Whitehouse. I'm on Twitter at LongWellandDon. Coming to you guys from Santa's workshop, Stuart, Florida, where we are bubbling over with Christmas cheer here. I've taken to heart the harsh criticism and feedback from last week's episode and have been really applying myself with renewed vigor to the holiday. So, you know,
we're hearing one side of this account. So
is the intern within range? Can we get a check-in?
No, she's not, and she will not be commenting on the podcast. The weather has been sparkling, beautiful. It's been crisp 50 degrees on the button the last two mornings when we woke up. We love to see that. Yeah, vibes are up. Who else is here?
My name is Jordan Shank. I am in Harrisonburg, Virginia, where it has been cold, helping maybe some of those Harrisonburgians into the Christmas spirit further with a cold snap this weekend into the teens both nights. I think we're below 20 currently at the time of this recording. I'm on social medias at Shank Jordan. Guys, I was enamored with the final round of the PNC Championship this afternoon.
It's good to have Tiger in the hunt, you know?
Good to have Tiger in the hunt. It's crazy how well these like children of the golfers play, like cameras on them, gallery around them. Freaking Annika's 12 or 13 year old son
so can good.
Roll the rock better than 99% of our continent's population. It's insane. He was dropping them for him everywhere. So love that for him. Not great as a self-evaluation thing to watch this kid just
a humbling round of 18 to watch
be a savant on the greens. But yeah,
Jordan,
really fun.
Jordan, did you have American currency on this event?
No.
Okay.
I don't think.
Oh, you
well, not in Virginia. You can't. But,
gotcha.
I think because there's amateurs involved.
Oh, all right.
It's not allowed.
So, I believe that's correct. Cool.
I was just watching for the love of the game and because I haven't played golf in a while. So I needed some of that.
Understood.
Jordan was fiending a little bit. But yeah, I did. I saw a couple holes. I didn't actually see the end. They went to a playoff, right?
Yeah.
Who ended up winning? Did Tiger win?
The Langers.
Did they? Okay.
I'm guessing you would have heard if Tiger and Charlie
that's
pulled it off.
Point. I've gotten three alerts on my phone somehow. What are your thoughts on Bernard teeing off from in front of the amateurs?
I mean, it's like he's playing it to the letter of the law. It was definitely an advantage.
I mean, I don't love that. I'm going to be
honest. On par 5, 18th, which was also the playoff hole, his tee box was about 120 yards in front of Tiger's.
Yeah.
So
he was teeing off in front of Charlie, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like two tee boxes in front of Charlie and Bernard's son. But both times, like Tiger sends his ball up the right side, splooshes into a bunker, and Bernard hits his on the same line. And the guy on the ground each time is like, well, it might get over that bunker. And he clears it by like 40 yards in the air. Hits the speed slot. It just zooms it.
Yeah. Shout out to Bernard. Just been hustling that bag for a long time.
He is grinding. Yeah. 67 years old.
Yeah, and he's like a senior tour icon, I think. He might be
What is the weird brand that he has on his visor? Is it like Sorinex or something? Is that it?
No, like, I don't remember.
feel like he's got like a weird like
I don't remember.
Brand that you never have heard of that is on his visor.
But they did like they mentioned several times that his son, who he was playing with, this pairing had won the tournament 3 times previously.
Right.
But they made sure to hammer home that this son of his it works in finance in New York City and doesn't play all that much golf all that often.
Yeah. Sure.
And he's just out here like flashing.
If I was his son, I would also
15 or 16.
I would like
and then about 16, he like 17, he pulled his tee shot into the water, and then on 18, he just hit big slices every time into the gallery. So the like in the hunt next to Tiger got to
may have got to him.
I understand that.
In the end,
if I was his son, I would also be like, hey, make sure you bring up my day job as often as possible.
Yeah.
Remind these.
Well, he couldn't hear it, but we knew.
No, I mean like to protect myself, like give myself a reason. Anyways, my name is Jason Kreck, as it turns out. I am back in the friendly city of Harrisonburg after my Florida sojourn, where, yeah, it's much colder. It was a wonderful weekend to stay inside and watch a lot of football. So we don't hate that. I do the social medias at Jason Kreck. And, yeah, excited to be back with you guys after a fun weekend, sort of fun weekend of football.
Yes. A weekend of football that happened, yes. Nonetheless.
Yes. Football occurred.
The books. What are we drinking tonight, gentlemen?
My picks continue to be on fire, as we'll get to later. So I've got some Eagle Rare tonight. To
Ooh, wow. Cheers.
Are we making any picks today, or are we?
No.
Okay.
We're celebrating. Bold. If we were making picks, he would be on Lemon Spindrift and Vodka.
That's what I'm saying.
Come on.
I just wanted to make sure. I am drinking a Ludwig from Pale Fire.
Wow.
So.
The Kolsch. They call him Jason Kolsch, is actually his name is you. His name is going to be changed to Jason Kolsch.
Yep.
I have some bourbon too, Jordan. This is the Wild Turkey 70th anniversary Jimmy Russell bottle. It's good. It's really good.
Cheers.
I like it. All right. I have a twist of lemon in there as well.
Ooh. Well, you fancy.
Yeah, you know. I like to open up the flavors. I'm a big flavor profile guy. Actually, at Santa's Workshop, we do this all the time. It's crazy. So it's just something that elves and I we get into. So, all right. Yeah, I mean, Jason, we played some golf on Wednesday. We teased it on the podcast last week. We did play some golf. We had a Wednesday. We were apprehensive about the weather, and we were blessed with really gorgeous day all around. Must it say. Was. It was a prime South Florida December day.
Yeah, we made the deposits into the Karma Bank because we made the 8:30 a.m. trip to Walmart.
This is true.
To grab a pair of golf umbrellas.
We did buy matching tailor-made golf umbrellas, so that we could been matching full kit wankers on the golf course if it came up.
I've seen those at Costco.
It was a good deal. I thought it was a pretty good deal. So
yeah.
I do have a golf umbrella now, which I'm excited about. So that was a good move.
Investment. But...
Yes, we took on the park in West Palm, and Jason, is your first lap of the park. How'd you like it?
It was wonderful. I thought about it. I approached it with more rationality and still dubbed it. I think it's my favorite course I've ever played.
Yeah.
It just in terms of like how it's laid out. Now it plays. It's you know in line with my strengths and appreciation in that.
Yes.
You got to work to lose a driver off the tee.
Correct.
Now, I think I only put that to the test like twice the whole day. I drove the ball pretty well, but
yeah,
there were two that got a little banana-y. But I just loved that, like, you know, you could get to the green from everywhere, but it was tough to get it close if you didn't know exactly where you wanted to go and didn't have your first shot in the right position. And I think that's kind of like what I'm looking for in a course. Like, I think that's what makes a good course. When you're anywhere from like a 5 to a 12 handicap, it should be not that difficult to break 90, but it should be really hard to break 80. Like I think if it should put you to the test to make birdies. Like you should have to hit 3 really good shots, but if you hit 4 solid shots, that should be a par. This shouldn't be that penal that you're just grinding over stuff to like sweat out pars and stuff like that. So, yeah, I loved it. The routing was wonderful. I loved that you could do like.
It's a good walk. It's not like a. I mean, we were limping around by the end of the day just because, you know, we were on our feet with the rest of JMU Nation at the Boca Bowl later in the evening. But
spoilers.
but it was
Very walkable. You could. I know. I thought about it later that they do like you can do. You can play six holes, or you can play three holes, or you can like they loop it really well. We got the Instagram famous concoctions canned at the. At the snack bar, they were delicious.
A cool gimmick. Got to hand it to him. Do, in fact, got to hand it to him. It's a cool gimmick.
We must
tip our hands. The to-go cocktail with the pop top on it was nice. Yep. One day, I'm going to play the 10th hole without blowing my tee shot into the par 3 course. I've played three times there, and I've done the same thing every time. And I wasn't even driving it that bad. And I still managed to do that. So, yeah. You know, I look forward to having like a direct approach to that green and not like a weird angle cutting. I considered taking my shot from in front of the, like the third par 3 hole where my ball was just sitting like green side, just pulling out like a 7-iron and just taking a full hack. but I decided that wasn't going to be kosher. So I moved her out of the way for the good of it. Yep. You know, for the love of the supers, you know, I respect the supers. So,
as we all do,
it was good. Yeah,
just a wonderful morning of golf, five star experience all the way through.
Playing partners were good. We played with a young man who absolutely pulverized his hybrid off every tee box. He never hit driver one time. It was really wild. Had a great swing. Young man is a med school student at Northwestern. A double Northwestern. A Medill grad.
A Medill grad.
And
Medill to med school, that's a unique path.
Yeah. Correct. He was playing with his somewhat elderly father. So we played the same tee box as his dad, which was, I think, a nice move. Kind of an unnecessary nice move. But he definitely whipped that hybrid out, just threw a ball on the ground, no tee. The weasels were not coming for him, and smashed it. So it was good. It was fun to watch him.
He hit some really good shots most of the day. He was a pretty good player, but like him just like peering that hybrid off flat ground every single hole was just like, man, like I don't blame you. I'd do the same thing, I guess.
Was it a case of like the 11-year-old hybrid model that's never leaving his bag?
No, it was a G330. Is the driver the one that matches the driver, the newest Ping model?
Oh, the G430.
Yeah, 430. Sorry, yeah.
Nice.
And I think
he had a Titleist driver in his bag, and he had Apex irons, so he was like playing a true sicko mode's delight mixed bag, which we love to see.
Free agent bag.
Yeah. So anyhow, that was fun. Pointed out to Jason, the park has like excellent par threes, and that was a treat. I had to play the one long one, like dead nuts into the wind. It was like 205 to the pin on the top shelf.
One where the road's right behind it.
Yes, top shelf.
Pin was in the back, straight into the wind. I think we shot
shades
it
of
like
that whatever that hole is at Heritage Oaks with the road behind it. That Jason and I accidentally hit a 4-iron that one time and just like blasted it onto Garver Church Road for no reason. Like, what did you hit there? I hit a 4-iron.
Yeah, we had like 168 to the pin. 4-iron. That is a tent pole golf memory for me. Anyways, the par threes are really cool. 11, that really cool one with like all the bunkers around it. Like you hit it down the hill.
I had the sickest up and down of all time out of the bunker behind the green. No, that was earlier. No. That was the other one.
I thought into the right bunker, but it turned out it was on the down slope of the bunker. Yes. And I had to like I was swinging straight.
Oh yeah, 11 is like the signature, like the real downhill one. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. A lot of very cool par threes. A lot of very cool par fours. Just a very well-rounded course that made you make some decisions. And
Jordan, I was bemoaning my short game let me down on some like just standard stock chips, but I did have one of the sickest sandy pars of all time. I hit it long on a par three into like, I mean, it was one of those bunkers where like you had to like just throw the ball like 25 feet in the air, like up and straight out. And,
oh, that's right. Yeah,
and I did, and I like rolled in like a 15-foot putt, and it was like, I mean, I was just so happy that I got it on the putting surface one big crisp swing.
The lip of the bunker was several feet above your head. You had to get that thing up in a hurry.
Just one of those ones where it just goes up and the ball just doesn't move. It just meets apex. Anyhow.
And then you also had the – you also two-putted from like 75 feet on the alien hole. That was
the alien hole. That's right. Yeah, and all three of us pulled our drives left into the adjacent fairway. And
we're within
like within like 6 feet of each other and all hit – shots onto the green. It was cool. It was maybe great. The mega angle. People are saying that that's the mega angle. So
you would appreciate Jordan on 15. Not a long par. It was like a 400-yard par four around the waist area, and I took a very aggressive line. Accidentally, but absolutely nuked it.
It had to.
I think it probably carried
it's
like
one of the best drives I've seen like in person.
Yeah. I just
it went so much farther than I thought it was going to go too. Like it was well in. Like I thought we were gonna like maybe find it like kicked up into the front of the stuff, but I had a great drive and you were like 120 yards ahead of where I was. I mean, it was a different. We took drastically different angles, but still, I was very happy with my shot. I was like, that, was like Jason's way up there.
I balanced it out, and Jordan, you will appreciate this because the ball rolled to a stop on a little bit of an upslope, so I got my wedge out and just laid the absolute sod over.
It was not the only
like 30 yards.
It's not the only time Jason
did that. The edge to the turf.
Just really navigated the terrain really well. But then I got up and down for par, and it was like, okay, that would have been a really depressing bogey. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
on those shots, it's so easy to like forget, like, oh, there's a little bit of slope here. Yep. I should probably match my shoulders a little more. You're just like so excited, like I got 75 yards.
I'm gonna clip this one in.
Driving so hard,
no problem.
I can already hear the contact and see the second bounce where
I see
it
the glory, just to pitch the putt.
Anyhow, all right. Well, golf happened. It was cool. We did go to the Boca Bowl. Jason, what's the temperature of JMU Nation post Boca Bowl?
You'd be shocked, but it's very good. As the most whimsical, flighty fan base in four counties. Things are good.
There was not a ton of whimsy in the section that we were sitting in. I got to be honest.
Well,
other than Baby Duke, who had a lot of
baby Duke.
There was a baby in front of us that was adorable, and his name was
I hope he was awake for the second half.
Decked out in Duke's gear, yes.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, we were sitting down there with the diehards for the first half when the Dukes did not play particularly well.
It was not my favorite. Troubling. The vibes were not great emanating from the fan base potentially were liquored up and had been in Boca Raton for 2 days. So, I would have expected a little bit more of like better energy from some people visiting.
People just can't handle Boca.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Defend paradise, bro. Am I right?
So the first half was rough. Dukes didn't play very well. We're getting their legs under them. But then after halftime, I went on a little 20-3 run in the second half and took down, whoever we played, Western Kentucky. I think the final was 27-17. That sound right? Yeah, that's right. Dukes looked good. We had it was a cool story. The third string quarterback that had to play because of injuries to the starter and the backup. He got benched like 2 years ago. Just had like he was kind of supposed to be the guy or was getting a run and just had a rough like 8 quarters in a row. And has been kind of riding the pine ever since. And so he got to come in and he played really well. And then the like redshirt freshman fourth string was kind of our battering ram of a quarterback. And he ended up winning offensive MVP because he ran for a touchdown and then threw a little Tim Tebow jump pass for another touchdown. But the third string, the regular starter, the guy who ran the offense most of the time, was pretty emotional afterwards and talked about like, I kind of figured I wasn't going to see the field anymore at JMU. Like he alluded, he's like, things were said, things were done. Like I didn't play well last time I did it. So to come out here and get the win was really special. And that was cool to see. It was just good vibes. And then, our stud defensive end hit the transfer portal on Monday and Friday and everybody panicked again, but you know what? He's going to go get paid. Thanks for your service. Appreciate it, buddy.
That's right.
I also saw the trophy for the Boca Bowl has the image of the Howard legend. Schnellenberger.
That's right.
Like laser etched onto the to the plate.
They love Howard Schnellenberger around those parts.
He's got a big old statue at the gates of the stadium.
Yeah,
Do they sell merch like Schnellenberger image and likeness merch?
I don't know.
I'm guessing they probably do. Like a shirt with a mustache on it. They're big on like the mustache. Like I think he used to wear cowboy boots too, right? That's his other thing. So I think I think like the cowboy boots are like one of the trophies involving FAU has cowboy boots on it.
I feel like his face would make a good coffee mug. Just like slant on the side.
His wife gave a pretty old lady message, just like, it was a great game, both teams played hard, but this is the winning team. And it was just like
at the trophy presentation,
at the trophy. So
it was wholesome,
hospitable,
yes, for sure. No, it was cool. It's good to see. I don't think Jason, I don't think I had properly done an assessment of this being like JMU's first like proper bowl game, so like I think I was kind of coming into it a little bit more what I would consider
well,
they made one, but they didn't qualify for it on their
own. We weren't eligible last year. We had to get in because there weren't enough 6-win teams. So
And they also lost last year, right?
And we lost because everybody hopped in the transfer portal and we didn't have a coach and we had to play Air Force, which was not enjoyable for
us. It sounds like a lot of excuse making. Typical picks. But
I got plenty. You want me to keep going?
No, I do not. But so I don't think I had quite like done that. And I was a little bit like, I don't want to say aghast, but like just I didn't really feel like I was loving the fan reaction to like the first half play. Like there was like a dropped like a questionable dropped pass on like that happened twice. And like listen, the guy overthrew him both times. Like it would have been a great catch either time, I think. And like dudes are just wearing the receivers out. Like fans with the exact facial hair that you would imagine
20
like,
feet away from these people.
Yes, exactly. And then like there was a utterance of, this is the Marshall game all over again. The refs are screwing us, man. Mm-hmm. And there was one of those. There was bemoaning the fact that like they only review calls when they go against JMU, not when the other team.
Oh, that's
like
good
that
stuff.
Was a classic. So I mean, I was kind of a little bit like I was expecting, I think, the energy to be a little bit lighter and not so like tight from our group of people.
You and me both. Brother.
But I was kind of surprised to see that. I guess I would say I love the zest, but like I also like kind of like it's the Buckle Bowl. Just let's keep things in perspective here. Like Western Kentucky's been in this game like 7 times, right? Like just relax. So
no, anyhow. I co-sign all of that. And we were in a section comprised of mostly those people, but I do think JMU fans have some FBS maturing to do.
And I mean, like I appreciate a diehard, but you know, I think particularly like pointed directive kind of like yelling has like gets to me a little bit more these days because I'm kind of like, come on, guys, like what are we doing? But
I'm insane. But for whatever reason, this year is the one that broke me with a lot of JMU fans, not all JMU fans, but a lot of JMU fans. Just how immediately we went from. Yes, let's move up to FBS. This is wonderful. We're finally with teams that care as much as we do. Now we have 10 or 11 really good games a year instead of playing for the one matchup with North Dakota State, the only other team at FCS that cares as much as we do. And so we were there like a year and a half ago. And now it's like, if we lose a game, it is a failure and an indictment on the program. And we need to really look at ourselves and just, you guys have to relax. Like,
you're going to lose sometimes. You're going to lose a game.
You're in a conference with people that did this before we did. Like App State was JMU before we were. And Georgia Southern was App State before App State was App State. And Marshall was Georgia Southern before Georgia Southern.
They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it, Jason.
They don't want to.
UCF is the king of them all, you know?
Well, they are a unique faction in Orlando. But...
All right. Well, that's enough JMU talk. Jeez Louise. All right. Go Dukes.
Go Dukes.
It was fun. Thanks, Jason, for you should go to a JMU game with Jason sometime. Jordan, also, by the way, this guy walks around, owns the place, unlimited sea, an unlimited sea of daps for this guy. So it's nice. All right, there were some other bowl games that happened. I don't really care about really any of them. I suppose the Florida game is nice to see the Gators have a similarly sleepy first half in which they just kicked 3 field goals. If you want to see some horrific quarterback play, I would invite you to watch Ty Thompson play quarterback for Tulane. That poor young man, former Oregon, like I think he was in the mix to like start at Oregon when Mario Cristobal was the coach way back in the day. Does not appear that he has progressed in his career as a passer. He's the third string quarterback at Tulane. Their starter transferred to Duke, and their backup was hurt or didn't play or whatever. So, anyhow, Ty Thompson, not great film, teachable film certainly. But he was bad. The Gators got it together in the second half. They also looked like they had not been practicing a ton. It would appear the vibes were appropriate for this game. didn't really seem like anybody was getting too bent out of shape. Lagway tried to force a couple passes early in the game and got bit by a couple interceptions. Otherwise, they'd probably been a bigger lead at halftime. But yeah, some interceptions, just good vibes for the Gators heading into the offseason. Also, a kid asked, a 5-star receiver, Dallas Wilson, just signed with the Gators today. Asked out of his financial aid agreement with Oregon, and they granted his release, and he's signed with the Gators. So that's good news.
Wow.
Good news for the Gators heading in. 2 5-star receivers in the class. Bugatti Billy is black card Billy swiping that thing for sure.
So, vibes. How would you gauge the fan base on the social medias? Have the vibes changed? Are we more optimistic than pessimistic now?
Yes, but the vibes are now like Florida is loading up and is should realistically expect to make the playoff next year. Those are the vibes.
Good. As long as so, expectations so
we've,
are control,
we've blown awesome. We've blown past, and like listen, Florida's schedule next year is not as hard as this year, but like yeah. Florida plays LSU like week 2 next year, and they play Miami week 4. So you know you get Long Island and you get someone else, and then it's you know you're getting right back to it. So. We'll see if Florida's 2-2 next year. We're going to be having the same conversations that we had this year, and then Billy's going to have a chance to win some down the stretch and, you know, sell a lot of hope again. But maybe Florida's the new North Carolina, just selling hope. I would hate that. I would hate that for me.
That is damning words from Logan.
Anything else from any bowl games? I saw UNLV ran a really cool fake punt.
They did.
That was a cool fake punt.
Yeah. Other than that, I can't say that.
Pass.
Much really happened here.
Yeah, Memphis and West Virginia played a fun one, but we were recording during that one. We've had, I think we're up to at least 3 instances of the newly arrived coach not coaching the bowl game, joining the talent in the booth. So I think if we can get that up past 5, I think we'll be doing really well. I'm pretty excited.
You got to. You got to put a face with a name and start recruiting through the screen.
You made a bowl
what
game.
What brought you to... the passion here is just different.
You know, truthfully, the fans, I mean, I have been blown away by the passion of these fan base, this fan
always
base,
and
the commitment.
And Mullen had even a bigger leg up because he came from the ESPN mothership. So they had him on pre the UNLV Cal kick, and he was in like a conference room somewhere or something. And he already had like all of the we speak down, like
Hell yeah. You know
we've played for the past 2 Mountain West Conference championships, and you know even though the games didn't go our way, we've been in those games, and we oh, the guy has
he's
not
back.
Lost a step.
He's back. Yeah,
he's never been more back.
I'm excited for them to like gun down a random Big Ten team in a like early season game. Like they're gonna like play Ohio State or something in 2 years and like week 2 and beat them and then go somehow like 3-4 in their own conference schedule. Just watch this space.
I'm on board. Follow this space.
Jason, Jordan, let's go to Pickville.
Pickville, here we come. As we've documented for a long time on this podcast this year, this is the first iteration of the 12-team college football playoff. The opening round of games were this past weekend. We had home host sites for 4 schools. We started on Friday night. Before we go game by game, we'll just hit the records real quick. Jason, you went 1-3. Logan went 3-1. I went 4-0. A clean sweep. The parlay finally hit. We are very proud of me.
Yeah, it did. It emphatically hit.
Yeah.
You put the hex on it, though, which was
with
good.
With gusto.
You did a good
job. I made sure to really reverse jinx it hard before that game even kicked. When we started Friday night, the battle for the state of Indiana. Indiana was at Notre Dame. Game day was there for like a four-hour stint before kickoff.
It looked cold.
It looked so cold. the like McAfee kick it for a gazillion dollars student just wiped out and ate crap because his plant foot, like I think the AstroTurf
just gave.
Like, frozen.
Yeah, there was no moisture in the air to get grip. So he went. Yeah, Indiana was at Notre Dame.
In spoiler alert, the closest game that we had all weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say also, you know, Cignetti did some woofing on the game day desk. Had a nice little moment with Saban in one of the stints where Saban pointed out that, you know, you certainly didn't learn talking all that smack from me.
Except he didn't say
smack. He wanted that to be clear.
And Saban has gotten pretty out of pocket with dropping the S-bomb repeatedly on the college game day.
McAfee's a bad influence.
I think we can just curse on game day now.
I think that's true. I think it's right.
Which I love. Yeah. I'm all for it. Let him fly.
Yeah.
Curse away.
But yeah, this was a game. This happened. Notre Dame pretty much outclassed Indiana the way I thought they would. Didn't look like a particularly conducive environment for points or crisp execution. It was more of a bludgeoning on both sides, and the bigger, more physical team did the thing, and they advance. So,
yeah, this was just.
I don't have a whole lot here.
Notre Dame just took hammers to them. That was all. We mentioned it. We talked about it on the pod that there's a good chance that Indiana wasn't going to be able to move the ball. Notre Dame might have the best defense in the country. Are we ready to say that?
No.
Okay. Who is the best defense in the country?
Georgia or Texas?
Texas or maybe even Ohio State, depending on the scheme they play against.
Okay. It's a lot of depending on.
If Ohio State's playing Michigan.
To be honest with you, I think Penn State's defense is better than Notre Dame's, too.
Interesting.
Oh, no, I think their defense is really good. Former Florida transfer corner, Jalen Kimber, on one side, by the way. DBU.
Good. That's a relevant note.
no, they're really good, though.
Anyways, this was I joked about it being the closest score, which it was, but it was 27-3 with, like, 2 minutes left, and Indiana got –
No, your smack talking coach punted down 17 in the fourth quarter. Like that was the white flag. Like you can't
down 24.
Yeah. Congratulations that you got an onside kick and you know ran off a couple scores there to get it like within, you know, like I've seen some Indiana writers like taking a victory lap on their game being the closest. Oh, no. Like congratulations for that.
I'll say JMU fans have seen that game plan before, of like. Allegedly, like, well, the defense is the only one playing well, so we wanted to put it in their hands. But like, that's not how football works, Coach Cignetti. Like, they don't.
Look, not when you're down 24 or 17.
Down three
or
touchdowns, and Notre Dame don't have to do anything. Like, that's happened a lot. There's a lot of people that think Cignetti's not a good big game coach, and I think that's painting with a pretty broad brush. But I do think that he gets very conservative, very quickly, and. It's kind of, you know, he came up under Saban, and Saban kind of did this for a while of like, no, it's the old adage of like, if I put the ball in the air, three things can happen, and two of them are bad, and that whole thing, and it's always so annoying. But
like, that's not how Indiana got to where they were this year, right? Like, they got there because they had a great passing offense, and they played really good defense, and they played like the best version of complementary football in that you can play in which you have a good offense and a good defense. Right. So like you can't be the guy that's pounding the desk and talking all that trash in front of the world. And then like going
to chill
team like lemon
that.
Booty, like when
try the cards your way up the field against Notre Dame.
Yeah. And, I mean, like it was unfortunate. Indiana got a turnover early in the game. Like they needed, they looked like they were going to go and score a touchdown. And then there was kind of a tremendous interception situation. That was the Indiana pick. That was the tremendous interception, right?
Yeah, when they gave it back, it was an overthrow. That was
your standard issue.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And then the next play, you know, 98-yard touchdown run, which kind of felt like that was the game, right? I mean, it didn't really, but at the same
certainly
time,
a
like,
bad omen,
that was the big flash. Sure. Like, I don't think Notre Dame played particularly well. I think Indiana's defense played, like, fine for this game. Yeah. You know, they gave up one big play and then, you know, probably just got outclassed and outmuscled over the course of an entire game. But they got nothing from their offense, and it doesn't appear that their game plan was, like, ready to attack a Notre Dame defense that is big and strong and I think pretty talented and good and well schemed up. But, you know, I don't think that – I mean, Notre Dame's best defensive player has been hurt all year and hasn't been playing the corner. And you could probably try to get at them a little bit, and they didn't really appear to be willing to even try. So it's kind of a James Franklin-ish, you know, an ode to James Franklin on the eve of his opus. So.
Yeah, they really struggled with Notre Dame's blitz schemes, which is not the first time I said that in their Ohio State loss. Like, it seemed like a solid offensive line, but one that was weirdly befuddled by any sort of, like,
Ohio State decided to just start blitzing and it was over. It was curtains at
right,
that point.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, the moment somebody, like, goes beyond one simple stunt, the offensive lineman kind of gets swivel-headed. And Rourke didn't have a lot of time, but he did the thing that he did against Ohio State where, like, about midway through the second quarter, he got the happiest feet in the entire world. And you just, you know, you're not going to win a college football playoff game against a really good defense like that. So
Yeah,
I think Notre Dame has a very good defense. I was really pleased to see the way they opened the game. Like, Indiana's first possession, they tried to run it inside. I think Notre Dame sent six or seven. Like, they blitzed on the first play. And it was very much a tone setter of, like, no, we're not going to just, like, you know, play cautious. We have the atmosphere. We have kind of all the intangibles behind us, and we're going to make you feel that you are on the road.
And I think I think Marcus Freeman is still, you know, up until this point, he's been somewhat untested, but I do think that's probably his impact on the program. I think there's a lot of Notre Dame teams in the last decade that would have been, you know, trying to do the same thing as always and not taking advantage of the hype and not taking advantage of that sort of thing.
Well, and I think he's tied the school record for most top 25 wins in his first two or three seasons.
I heard something to that effect, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, like, so Notre Dame did a good job of neutralizing Indiana's run game early.
Yeah.
Then the Indiana pass game, while they were, like, in denial that we can't run the ball and we'll mix in some pass to maintain balance, was just like, okay, we'll try another back shoulder throw to Surratt out on the sideline. They waited way too long to start throwing those crossers in the middle of the field. And when they started looking at those, they started to move the ball a little bit.
Weird.
But it just took too long to get there. So I don't know if that's hubris or just kind of slow on the uptake.
There's a lot of
data processing. But
as part of the, like, conservative game plans that Cignetti has produced in the past, there does seem to be a lot of, like, no, this is, we looked into this and this is going to work. We are so sure this is going to work. We're going to keep, like,
ran the models and they did not give us this possibility.
Exactly. They were still running the ball between the tackles in the third quarter, and it was driving me insane because I was just like, you have proven emphatically that doesn't work. And you haven't done much play action or looked over the linebacker's head at all to keep them honest. So why do you keep doing this? And I genuinely think it's because, like, no, we looked at it, and from film, we were pretty sure we could run the ball inside. So I can't be wrong, so we're going to prove it. And turns out you were wrong. So,
so that was Friday night.
Notre Dame advances. Yeah, to play Georgia next week. Side note, in case you guys are looking for a hot tip, I'm already on the under that game. 44 is the number right now.
Okay.
So no Carson Beck for Georgia next week.
That's true. It's going to be confirmed, or they're still preparing?
That's confirmed.
Well, okay. Is it confirmed?
I thought I saw it confirmed.
The last I saw was that they missed
the game, not preparing for him to miss the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know, Gunnar Stockton, last time I saw him, his head had literally been shorn from his body by Makuba. So
Gunnar Stockton is the most BYU quarterback name for a guy who doesn't play at BYU.
Yeah, and if there's a second place, it's unfortunately it's Georgia, and that's where he is. So,
yeah. All right, moving to Saturday, noon was in Happy Valley. Kind of an unofficial whiteout situation going on here. Also very cold in State College.
It appeared to be cold.
SMU struggled with the cold again. This also, I think, like, going back, spoiler alert, Penn State kind of ran away with this, aided significantly by
two pick sixes yes.
In the first half. Three interceptions. They scored a touchdown off the other one as well. But just a lot of, like, picture-perfect breaks for their defense. I picked them on the strength of their defense, but did not anticipate any type of output like this.
You didn't anticipate Kevin Jennings hitting linebackers between the numbers? That's...
Yeah, well, it was like between the numbers, and then one of the picks was like he tried to throw it around the free end rusher who volleyball set it to himself and then grabbed it out of the air. That was pretty sick. But yeah, like I don't come away from this game thinking like, oh, Penn State could go and get it. I just think like they handled the task that was set before them on Saturday, and that's great. I have no idea what to expect out of them in the next round. They were up 14-0 after the two pick sixes. They are driving deep in their own end. They get a 4th-and-2.
They're like for it. 20, right?
Yeah, go for it. And I think the line to gain was their own 20 or 21. And just the most like vanilla, apathetic inside run you could have possibly called. Franklin went for it, got stuffed, and of course Jennings bailed him out with the third pick that we just talked about. I like SMU, incredible season. I don't think this invalidates the season they had or what they accomplished to this point. We saw a lot of Lane Kiffin tweets during this game, especially.
His team should have beat Kentucky when they had a chance.
Yes.
Pretty straightforward.
This is more macro conversation. Like,
yeah.
I think people need to take a step back and understand that as more teams get involved, the likelihood for bigger margins of victory, especially in the early rounds, is going to increase.
Right.
We're not, 3 years removed from Georgia beating TCU in the national title game a four-team playoff by nearly 60 points. So these things happen.
I didn't belong either, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Speaking about, there's not a lot to add on about the game. I think, I don't think there's any doubt that Penn State was the better team in this game. It was a pretty significant bummer to see SMU shoot themselves in the foot as much as they did. Right. Because
it was a masterclass of shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah.
It was like sabotage.
And we even said it on when I picked them, I said, I think they got all their shooting themselves in the foot out of the way in the first half of the ACC championship. I was very wrong.
I didn't think the lights were going to be too bright at noon in Happy Valley, but evidently they were.
So that was a bummer. The entire first half of Saturday was just nothing but a barrage of Lane Kiffin and SEC fanboys and all this stuff, like saying it's so embarrassing. And most of it came from clearly Alabama should have been in the playoff. Alabama was not next in line, to be very clear. They might have been third in line.
Right.
South Carolina should have been next in line. But, it's just dumb. Like, this is going to happen, particularly with the weird seeding quirks that we have this year that I am 99% sure are going to go away. Like, I don't think
they have to. They must go away. We got to get them out. Like,
you'll never hear a bigger mid-major G5 defender than me. But
we know.
It's very fair.
Well documented.
Boise State to not be the 3 seed. Like,
yes,
it's we can do.
No, because you're inviting this to happen now on 2 straight weekends and not
right, exactly.
I think this is what this is saying, though, is there still is like a very clear delineation between top 4-5 caliber team and top 15 caliber team, right? Yep. And unfortunately for SMU and Indiana, exactly the thing that you could pick at being like the issue with them came to be, right? They, you know, hadn't really had a chance to prove it on, against a big team. We didn't really believe that they could do it. Frankly, same thing for Tennessee. I mean, a little bit, to be honest. Like, they squeaked one out against Alabama. I don't personally think Alabama was that great this year. So, I should say, I think Alabama was very flawed this year. I think they were very talented, but I think
top end very high,
very, very flawed and streaky team. So, like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't. It's a bummer that the games happened the way they did. I don't think it's like a referendum, because, like, I mean, I had a friend of mine text me like, "Well, I think Miami would have been a better game." It's like, I guarantee you, Miami would have been a better game, but they should have beat Syracuse when they were up 21-0 against Syracuse when they
games
played that last game of the season. Like,
could also beat Georgia Tech.
Yeah, they could have also beat Georgia Tech when they had, you know, when they were kind of farting around with Georgia Tech. So it's like, you know, Miami knew that their season did not have any marquee matchups on it, like pretty early on, that they were going to have to go undefeated. And they didn't do, they failed to do that. And they didn't even need to go undefeated. They only had to lose once. And they failed to do that against the really weak.
They had multiple stops on the train. They could have.
And also Miami's defense is terrible. So you can't tell me that Penn State wouldn't have scored 50 on Miami too. Right. Like, I mean, maybe they would have also kept themselves in the game, because I think Cam Ward's best quarterback in the country. And like, that's kind of how they did it. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a bummer. I sometimes struggle with the like nebulous SEC fanboy, because I kind of think it's a bit of a meme sometimes, and it's a bit of like a kind of a straw man. Like, I don't know that person necessarily exists in the pure sense that people who are trying to make the opposite point portray that person as existing. Like, I know for me, no love lost seeing Ohio State beat the brakes off Tennessee yesterday. I would have been kind of happy to see either team lose. Neither team's my favorite, but like, I don't mind seeing Tennessee lose. I don't mind seeing Alabama lose. I don't mind seeing Georgia lose. I don't mind seeing LSU lose. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't understand the person who's like rooting for the spirit of the SEC. Like, I don't actually think that person really exists. Like,
right. Nobody's the Rob Lowe arguing against it existing.
Yes. Right.
I think it's. I think
that person is Peter Burns. I think that person is Peter Burns on Twitter.
So there's two categories of people. One is like the not like sort of mainstream media member that is trying to make a name for themselves and get a bunch of traction, and that's,
well, they're on thing. SEC Network, the anti, right now. They're trying to make
the anti Danny Cannell,
which again, Peter Burns.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you see them making a big stink on Twitter, and they say stuff and like backing up Lane Kiffin and stuff like that. And then you'll see there are fans who tweet a bunch of stuff about the SEC and everything, but mostly they're just trying to defend it for their team because they want to shore up stuff for their team. In doing so, they have to kind of parrot everything Greg Sankey is saying, which is like, Greg Sankey has convinced a lot of people that like losses in the SEC should mean more than wins elsewhere.
If we've learned anything over the last several years, people love hitching themselves to questionable wagons.
Yes, that's
very much so.
Well, and it's weird too.
America.
Because, like, I don't think a lot of people were arguing, other than me, that Tennessee, you know, maybe we could get them out. Right? They were clearly like, I guess, the other team that deserved to be in, and they got absolutely waxed. Spoiler alert in their game. So like, the whole SEC thing like undermines itself by the fact that like the non-arguable SEC team that got in, was non-competitive. So
yeah,
all right.
So that was SMU, Penn State, Clemson, and Texas kicked off at 4. This
looked like a beautiful day in Austin. Side note:
yes, I think it was in the 60s, somewhere in the 60s.
All weather.
Numerous tinges of orange in the stands.
I know, it's laughable that they have turf in that stadium.
Yeah,
it makes me mad. It makes me mad.
Buku dollars.
Yes,
to have
it makes me mad that like, yeah, okay, all right. I mean, FAU's field was grass and beautiful, by the way. Side note.
Yeah. We'll talk to Scotty and Jordan about that. Clemson was at Texas. So I'm 2-0 at this point. I'm staring down a 50% complete parlay ticket. This was the one that gave me the most concern because, one, the number was the biggest.
Yes.
Two, I still have some Sark in big game.
Quinn Ewers, / Quinn Ewers.
Yes.
Just general ambivalence. Yeah.
Yeah, we may have to stretch this out to an hour and a half so I can slander Quinn Ewers properly. Clemson, to their credit, like, took the opening kick, went right down, scored a TUD on the opening drive, and I thought I was definitely screwed. Because again, big number.
You know what we don't do on this podcast is overreact to the first drive of a football game. All right, we've been over this.
No scripts here.
So Dabo and the boys scripted up a TUD, and then they lost the rest of their homework. The file didn't save, or something didn't happen.
Yeah.
But Texas is a machine. I think they and Ohio State are the two teams who played in round one that I was most impressed with. I will say I think Sark is going to cost them a game at some point. I don't think they win the title, and I think it will be because Sark, one, tries to get too cute or asks Ewers to do something he's just not capable of.
He's good for like just a one, just kind of like, whoof, what was that?
Oh no.
Yeah, Arch Manning insertion. I think he went one for like seven on those situations. And the only one that worked was because Arch tucked it and made an omelet out of a broken egg.
Yes.
But I think like Ewers is limited mobility, limited arm strength. That's going to cost Texas at some point. What really helped them here was O-line depth. They had two starting O-linemen leave this game with injuries, and they were able to shuffle around.
They ran the rock in this game.
Yeah, I was shocked at how like little that seemed to affect the flow of the game, because I'm familiar with watching teams who like one guy goes down and we've suddenly got a walk-on shifting to right tackle, making his first start,
appearance.
Like, I think he's probably like in the Fiji rush class or something.
Right.
So it must be nice to be wealthy and have the goods down there.
And Texas got Banks back, who is like, I think that like he's like a top five pick offensive tackle. He did not play in the SEC championship game. He didn't play in this game. He was mauling dudes. They ran it really well. I mean,
and Clemson's got a good D-line.
Yeah.
They got a good front, and they were neutralized.
Yeah, Texas seemed like their backs seemed very fast, at least the top two guys, Blue and Wisner, seemed like they hit the second level pretty quickly. But
yeah, they were very good at, like, patiently waiting for the hole to open and then, blasting through it once it was there.
Yeah, Sark kind of did a little bit of a James Franklin and sort of invited Clemson to hang around in this game a little too long. He could have kicked a field goal to go up like three scores, and they went for it. And then I think, I don't know. You're right, Jordan. There's some questionable decisions there. I mean, Texas just like they do keep coming though. I gotta hand it to them. They didn't like shell turtle up after that. They just kind of like got right back to it, and Clemson didn't really seem to have an answer. So
as I was saying, Cade Klubnik, I thought, played a whale of a game. I texted in the thread non-sarcastically, I think he might be the best college football quarterback right now based on what I saw against Texas. Clemson had no running game, especially once Maffa left and did not return.
Maffa looked like he was going through it too. You hate to see that.
Yes. Klubnik was doing the Syracuse sacrificial plunges there for a while. But too many horses in Texas's barn.
What I was saying when I had my Zoom muted from 2002 was that it does help to have Jaden Blue in the backfield for Texas. Clemson kind of, I mean, they closed it within a touchdown with like 10 minutes left, and Jaden Blue just ran over like three tacklers.
Jaden Blue saved Sark from himself.
Yeah, exactly.
That's hit that stretch.
Just hammered.
Occasionally, Texas, it happened this game too, they dial up a screen pass that is like
fiendish.
So good. And I love it. I love.
Yes, they do. But they also dial up screens that are so bad.
Yes, that was tough. That was a tough look. Yes. That was not.
They're probably occasionally the same screen passes.
Yeah, it just. Was like the Ewers, I think they just like they're
rolling,
library.
Bootlegging left, and then he turns 180 and jump passes behind him, which again, probably not something you should ask any quarterback to do, let alone Mr. Quinn Ewers.
Wide shortstop throw across the field.
Yeah. Bless his heart. Did probably have enough of Quinn Ewers versus Cade Klubnik in high school footage by about the first quarter of this game. Like, yeah. We got it, guys. A couple of Texas high school quarterbacks going at
back
it.
Back in Austin.
Legendary kids. Yep, back at it. All right, let's keep it moving here.
Yep. So that was game number three. Game number four, Tennessee to Ohio State. Ryan Day, all business, showed up wearing multiple layers of some sort of suit on the field. Pants that were a little too short, especially given the weather. And Ohio State really took care of business. I saw the red tops, red bottoms, and knew I had a shot. Because that's probably their best uniform. And
I was surprised they went with it and didn't do like a more traditional home silver pants, but it looked good. It would have been cool if they let Tennessee go all orange to play against the all red.
Ooh, I wouldn't have liked that.
I mean, it would have been a lot to see, but the Dukes got to go all purple against all red, which was nice.
Yeah, but that's better because it's like their purple's more of a blue primary, so it's like
purple.
More contrasting.
Like a Clemson purple, kind of. But I'm with you. No, Ohio State, this is the Ohio State murder weapon machine that we expected to see all year. Jeremiah Smith is so good. And listen, Will Howard had himself a ball game. I have been Will Howard skeptical / curious all year, and he, like, they can run – like those little like dump offs to the sideline, they can run that play so fast that it's like it gives the receiver an opportunity to like turn his head around and like get outside of the outside defender who never has the guy out leveraged for some reason against Ohio State.
No chance ever.
Yeah, it's wild. So I mean, shout out to Ohio State. Yeah. They got it done. I would love to see. I mean, they get to play. Congratulations, to Oregon! You get to play Ohio State in your first playoff game. But
not even at home.
It's a rematch. Yeah, it's a rematch of a game we saw earlier this year. But yeah, and then Tennessee. I mean, I don't know. Thanks for coming. Nico's not ready. He's not ready, and it's fine. They Tennessee's missing. Like they're missing a dude at receiver really bad, and the game got way out of it. What were you saying, Jason? Thanks for the sponsors, by the way.
Yeah, thanks to the sponsors. I was saying that the two notable things for me is that one, we probably need to issue a group mea culpa because Will Howard put some balls in the bucket on a couple people. What?
I think we offered fair criticism before this game. Up to this point,
he does have a size block where his heart used to be. Also, still, and he cannot not just like parade down the sideline with like tons of let's goes. And
he seems like one of the more extreme, like momentum dependent quarterbacks. Like when the train gets going and rolling on the tracks, it's dang near unstoppable.
But that should be a thing for like should be how they play. You know, like, I don't know why they get seduced into playing like murder ball one or two games a year. Like, it's like, oh, we're playing Penn State, so we're going to plan to win 17-12. And we're playing Michigan, which means you're going to have to slug it out. It's like, how much
run the ball 35 what did
Scott Van Pelt said? He texted Chip Kelly, throw it to four. Like, yeah, just throw it to four. How about that? There's a good game plan. I mean, it's clearly not that simple, but.
So I guess when I say mea culpa, I don't know that I'll speak only for myself. I don't know that I knew that Will Howard had those throws.
And he had some probably kind of with you on that. He made he made really good throws last night. Yeah.
Mostly
open receivers.
They also true. They, I don't know if they saw something, but Tennessee's linebackers were just in hell all night on those little swing passes. And it was they ran tight ends behind the offensive line on swing passes. They ran running backs out of the backfield. They ran drag routes.
Oh, they had one where they motioned Henderson out and had a D-end covering him on a go.
That's
bad news.
Just dead. And so I don't know if they saw it on tape, but it was open. Like Logan said, it was open all day, and it let them get their athletes outside in space and just roast some hapless Tennessee defenders. Tennessee's not – it's like everybody said, like they – Nico put up the numbers in the beginning of the year, but he did that because they were able to like establish it and get him some space. And when he doesn't have space, he's not there yet.
And I mean, he took a beating too.
He did.
Samson did get hurt in the first half of this one.
That's true.
Nico takes some big shots. He's a big gangly, like six. I mean, he's what a Stanford seed said, like when you stand next to him, he's volleyball tall. He's like 6'7", right? He's got that kind of build, right? He's a volleyball player.
He flipped around a bit.
Yeah. He would appear to be like maybe needs to go to the Lamar Jackson school for not getting just crushed all the time.
Jane Daniels got murdered pretty much all last year, and he seems to have figured it out. So.
Correct.
It took a rib injury this year to really tone him down. I think, like, to Nico's credit, seeing him earlier in the year, he does seem to have grown in that he's more willing to, okay, I've gone through my reads, nothing's there, I am going to take off and get something positive here. Whereas early in the year, he was holding on to the ball forever.
Yes, that's true.
Lit up. Like that Oklahoma.
Probably because he got away with it getting fat and happy against Long Island University and people like that, right?
Yeah. So it is encouraging
if
you're Tennessee to be like, okay, we've got in-season growth here and our highly touted quarterback prospect seems to be making leaps and bounds in some important areas. Ohio State, great showing by them. They played much looser than they did, certainly against Michigan, which I think is also key in kind of opening that operation up. I don't think this by any means washes all of Ryan Day's sins away or absolves him of his previous crimes. Like, again, this is like, you passed the test that was in front of you.
Right.
I remain skeptical whether to trust that this is your now identity moving forward, or if this was a really good situation and you took advantage of it type deal.
I'm curious about Tennessee moving forward a little bit. Like, how does Tennessee get better? Because, like, this is probably the most rewarded Tennessee team we've seen in a while, right? I don't know if it's the best. I think the Hendon Hooker team from a couple years ago was better, but we had a 14 playoff then and Hooker got hurt towards the end of the year, right? So that kind of was a bit of a bummer. But like, I'm curious moving forward. I mean, Tennessee, I think, needs to get better. Like we said, they don't have like a Jalen Hyatt at receiver right now that can just like stretch it. But like, to me, Nico did do a better job throughout the year of maybe managing the game, but like, I think that also took away exactly what Tennessee wants to do, which is like, I think, to be a little bit more like dynamic on offense and like be able to stretch the field a little bit more. And they just didn't seem to have that gear this year. And it's interesting that like they lean on their defense and lean on their run game. And that seems to be sort of antithetical to like the Heupel thing. Just curious, like, is it like, does the Heupel thing come back? Is this who Tennessee is? Is Nico maybe not like the superstar, can't miss, you know, top end guy? I mean, it's probably a combination of a lot of those things. And I'm not necessarily being like a total hater on Tennessee as like a Florida fan, but like I am. Tennessee almost lost. Like there's some plenty of games this year that Tennessee like kind of let teams that in theory they were much classier than hang around.
So I think that's, and I will preface this by saying I haven't seen a ton of Tennessee, but what it looked like on Saturday and the few times I saw them is that I don't think they have a glaring weakness. I think they need like a slight bump across the board to get to the next level.
So they're like, they're Penn State basically.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair comparison.
Yeah, they may not have had glaring weaknesses, but they didn't have any like clear plus areas.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have like Nico. I think Nico's going to be fine. I think he's really
good. I mean, he looks really good.
And particularly if you get like, I agree with you. I think they need like, you need a number one. You need a guy that is just a constant threat. And then I think they do need to get better because I would take Penn State over them right now because of the defense. I don't think Tennessee has that defense. And so I think you probably need to get better on the defensive side of the ball. Now, Ohio State's going to find any crack they can get through with the talent that they have across the board on offense. But I don't think they have like, oh man, if they don't get better in both trenches, they're screwed. I think they're a B or a B plus at every position group, And to be at the next level, you have to be an A-minus at least every position.
Yeah, so maybe the question you're asking, Logan, is like, has Heupel peaked already?
Yeah, and that might be kind of what I'm getting at is like, how does it get like a ton better for like the Josh Heupel Tennessee experience? Yeah.
I don't know what their NIL is. I don't know.
I think it's really good.
That's what I've heard. I don't know what their normal recruiting situation is, but I think they just need it.
I think they're in one of those states that has like advantageous NIL rules too. But I think that stuff is all in theory going to be like a little bit more normalized, I guess, across the board one of these days. Anyhow, that's probably a good call, Jordan. I'm just curious. I stay curious.
That's good.
They call me Curiosa. So
Curious George.
That's right. Cool. All right. So next round of games, Georgia, Notre Dame, we mentioned Penn State, Boise State, Texas, Arizona State. Could be a bloodbath there, could be honest. And we got Ohio State, Oregon. So good matchups.
Yeah.
Again.
So a little teaser for the picks episode. Two of those lines opened close to 14, the other two opened around 1 or 1.5. So. The real duality of college football.
Yeah, Notre Dame opened, I think, as a slight favorite, and Georgia is now a slight favorite.
Hmm. Okay, I didn't know it had moved.
Yeah,
back.
Excellent.
I am very curious to shoot from the hip with my thoughts on that one when the time comes, because
there will be
there certainly will be thoughts.
Watch this space.
Yeah. And then
I think it's four. I'm very excited for all four games. If nothing else, that's what this playoff has gotten us. Like, I'm very invested in all four of these games.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like, I mean, we pay a lot of attention to college football, but like, I'll be honest, I haven't watched a ton of Oregon this year, right? I mean, I've watched Oregon in big
classic
games.
East Coast.
Yeah.
Member.
Exactly. I hate the Big Ten. What I've seen of Oregon, I'm really impressed by. But I mean, same thing with Arizona State, right? You just like. You know, not catching a ton of Arizona State. Big 12 afternoons kind of bleed together. I did watch more of them down the stretch. They seem to be a well put together team. Scadabo's a lot of fun. But, you know, we'll see if they can do the big rumbling running back thing against Texas. And we'll see if Boise could do the big rumbling running back thing against Penn State, right? Like, let's go. I think Boise has a better chance against Penn State given what we saw when they played Oregon earlier this year. But we'll see.
Yeah. Save it for the podcast.
We will. Right. I will. Those games are on New Year's Day, all of them?
I think one is on – is it one
might
on
be
Year's
New Year's Eve?
Yeah, so Penn State, Boise State is the evening of December 31st.
Sick.
The other three are New Year's Day.
Nice little, like, 10, 11-day break for those young men.
Yeah.
So they can focus on school.
We also got the pictures of all of the bowl officials arriving at the winning team's press conference to formally invite them to the next round, where the bowls will be taking over. Thank goodness. So,
listen.
Pass the baton.
My life goal, as established previously, new life goal is to become a bowl official for the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl or the Vizio Fiesta Bowl. Just you have to negotiate like one monster contract like every 8 years. The PlayStation 2 Fiesta Bowl. I mean, we've seen them all, right? So,
Fortnite Rose Bowl.
There was a Fortnite OG sponsored thing, wasn't there?
Yeah, something like that. I think they had the pregame show. Or something like that.
God.
For the TNT Max games.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you explain Fortnite to me in like 30 seconds what goes on?
Not really.
It looks...
Not in 30 seconds.
Okay. It looks very confusing. It looks like it would be something I would hate.
I've never played.
Yeah, I can confirm that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
It looks really poorly produced as well. Why does it look so crappy?
Well, the whole intention.
No, I think that's part of
the graphic style.
Yeah, that's part of the
kind of cartoon. It's a third-person shooter, but it also incorporates you can build stuff, like you can build ramps and you can build walls and stuff like that.
Defenses.
You're playing against 180 other people at the same time, and the last person surviving wins that game.
People just should play Halo like adults, you know.
Don't I know it, brother?
These are the same people that did play Halo like adults. Now
they are adults. Yeah. Gotcha.
We're still adults.
All right. I've always been curious. I've seen clips and stuff, and occasionally you'll see like a clip come across the timeline, and I'm like, let me just check this out real quick and see what's going on. And it looks like chaotic. It is terrible. The graphics look horrendous. There's always just like, it seems like you can just do things, just be doing stuff.
Yeah, you can just be doing stuff.
I don't really love that. I'm gonna be honest, I don't love that.
No, it's That's like fair. Jordan said, it's very much not up your alley.
There's no rules.
I've never actually played it. I've just seen it.
I'm a big rules guy, as you know.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
My dad announced to me on the phone today that he lived life outside of the rules. Like, semi-seriously. And
was this in connection to a story he has just told, or he just called you up and felt the
news? No. We were on the phone, and he, like, dropped some weird pearl about, like, how he has, like, lived life outside the lines or something, and I was just cracking up. I was like,
just a rebel without a cause. Love him.
DLW out here in these mean streets. All right.
Spread your swings.
You guys, are we done? You guys got anything else to add? We'll catch up and make some picks before the games. We need to let the injury situation settle out and really dive deep into
These lines get super sharp.
I've got a fleet of drones that I'm going to be flying to all the practices to check things out. UFOs.
Those were our drones above the Northeast that everybody panicked about.
We were looking at Penn State's practice.
Yeah.
We were actually looking at...
This weren't like Belichick calling all of his droids to Chapel Hill from the warehouses in New England.
It's like homing pigeons. They follow him. Daddy speak. Oh, I did see that Steve Belichick is going to be the new defensive coordinator at North Carolina.
Yeah, who could have seen that coming? That's crazy.
But he is going to stay on and coordinate the defense for Washington's bowl game, though. So it's big of him.
Yeah. That'll Thank play goodness. Well with the recruits.
Yeah.
Has he been named coach in waiting yet?
I have not.
Chapel Hill?
I have not seen that, but if that happens.
They'll probably wait for him to get there. I would imagine.
Yeah. Once he arrives, he will be named coach in waiting.
Immediately be coach
in waiting. Here's the key to the city. And
a controller, the control chip for the drones is.
And some Argyle.
Yeah, we'll be back with you on the other side of the holiday, I think, probably.
Yes, and let me be the first to wish you guys a really Merry Christmas. And you know, live
happy
it up.
All the other
Merry
holidays.
Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. Well, I think that starts on Christmas to this year. So, shout out to everybody. Happy holidays.
I got a couple lamb shanks and a bottle of wine. I'm ready to get after it.
Steve Craig and I are doing another rib roast. It's going to be delicious.
I do love a rib roast.
I got to pick up some ghee.
Oh.
I know, that's right. You never struggled to pick that up.
I always pick up the ghee.
All right. Thank you for joining us on the Wheel Route Podcast. If you made it this long, God bless you. As always, you can find us at Wheel Route Podcast on Instagram. You can send us emails to wheelroutepodcast@gmail.com. And you can go to thewheelroute.com. That is the website. You can see pictures of us there. You can listen to the show there. You can go back in the archives. You can check the pick spreadsheet. Jordan is necked into the lead by one game, I think, on the picks. That's right. But, you know, we're putting some space between us and 500 on the year, Jordan, which is what I like to see. So
important.
You know, glad that we didn't all just go 2-2 in the most boring fashion possible, which would have definitely was on the table. So
It's on the table coming up this week.
So. Bingo. If we meet again, until we meet again, we love you guys. Go Gators. Horns down.
Go Dukes.